All right, Henry Schulman joins us of the San Francisco Chronicle, a KNBR insider, but they're really one of the top beat writers in the country. Henry always has the interesting lead. I tell you that in the story. I never know where you're going to go with that. I think it's terrific.
Well, thanks, and it's great to have back-to-back insiders on it. Let me just say from the outset that everything Baggerly just said was 100% wrong.
Yep.
He got the story completely wrong. It's going to turn out completely different. I didn't even hear what he said, but I just want you to know he was wrong.
Well, this is the old 60 Minutes, Shane Alexander, Jack Anderson, and we're going to do it like Saturday Night Live.
Yeah.
Shana, you...
Blankety-blank. Andy, you ignorant blankety-blank.
I loved it. Hey, a couple of things. First of all, Hector Sanchez, what's up with him? And I know there have been some tweeting about it this morning. Can you bring us up to date on his physical condition? Because it does dovetail into maybe next year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I haven't heard anything since last night, but he took another foul tip off the mask. And this is becoming a dangerous situation. There is something about the way Hector Sanchez catches the ball where he is more susceptible to these foul tips. And I remember him telling me earlier in the season that Posey talked to him about getting smaller behind the plate. You know how catchers sort of will, they'll get a little taller when there's a runner on base so they can be in a better position to throw to second base. But Hector was sort of in that higher position all the time. And Posey said, look, if you get down in your squat a little more and hold your glove up, there are fewer angles for the ball to hit your mask. And he tried to work on it, but clearly this guy is susceptible to foul tips in the mask. And this organization is going to have to sit down and think about Hector Sanchez's future, his future not only playing position, but also think about maybe one day wanting to be able to hold his kids and live a long life. And I think he has shown some athleticism, Hector has, and it might be a case where they have to think about putting him in another position just to save his life.
Mm. Boy, amazing. Now, Lincecum goes today, and, we watch Comcast a lot, and Greg Papa had these charts up last week, Lincecum with Sanchez, without Sanchez. Sanchez make that much of a difference to Tim Lincecum? I mean, look, this guy's made, as I said today, his 245th major league start. Is that that important?
No, I don't really think that's the issue. I think the issue is that you get beat up as a catcher. Mm-hmm. You get particularly beat up when Lincecum is pitching because, you know, Lincecum's a guy who's going to throw a lot of balls in the dirt. A lot of balls are going to come up and hit you. And when you catch a Tim Lincecum game, you're going to get banged up. And Buster Posey is one of the keys, supposedly, that drives this offense. All this conversation about having to move Buster out from behind the plate to save his body, well, that's what Bochy's trying to do every fifth day. Every fifth day, Bochy is trying to save Buster Posey's body by not having him catch Tim Lincecum, and that's a big part of it. There's no feud anymore. These two guys like each other. They can work together if they have to work together. But Posey's going to have to get days off from behind the plate. And in Bruce Bochy's mind, if you're going to have to give the guy days off from behind the plate, might as well be when the hardest pitcher to catch is on the mound. So that's why somebody else catches Tim Lincecum.
But is Sanchez that big a deal to Lincecum? Because the chart had with Sanchez catching as opposed to Susak catching or anybody else.
No, I don't really think so.
Okay,
I don't really think that's the issue. I think the issue is saving Buster Posey. And if Andrew Susak is the catcher next year or is the backup catcher next year or whatever, I think he could catch Lincecum just as well.
Where's Benji Molina? They made sweet music together, huh?
Yeah, I don't know if Benji Molina is in physical condition right now to dance to any sweet music. Now,
well, physical condition was never his strength to begin with.
Now that he's retired for a couple of years, that worked out well.
Yeah, it worked out well. Hey, let me ask you. You had a note about Mike Morrison. I was asking Marty earlier if he could see any adjustments he's made, or is he just going through a hot streak? Is it just the ebb and the flow of the season? And I think he alluded to the supermoon, maybe. What do you think's going on with Mike Morrison? It's allowed him to get some extra base hits when they've needed it.
Yeah, let me give you a little bit of a quick history lesson. I haven't even written this. But I find it interesting. When the Washington Nationals came into town right after the Giants swept that Mets series in June, the Nationals came into town, and somebody who was close to the Nationals told me that one of the reasons Morris was hitting so well is pitchers, you know, are throwing him outside because that's what you typically do to a power hitter. You throw breaking stuff away so you can't pull home runs. Mm-hmm. And they said, watch, the Nationals are going to throw in on him because he has a bit of a hole in his swing in. So the Nationals threw everything in. And when a big power guy sees those pitches in, he starts trying to pull them. And I think starting with that series, Michael Morse got really pull happy. And that's not his game. Mm. Michael Morse is best when he's extending his arms on pitches off the plate and hitting them the other way. And I think he just got into some bad habits starting with that series.
Okay.
And had a hard time and has had a hard time getting out of them. And I think other teams saw that Morse was having trouble with that pitch inside, so they were saying, you know what, let's pitch him inside. And that's what's been happening, and it's messed up his swing. And what we've seen the last few days is we've seen Michael Morse going back to what he did the first 2 months in first week of June, and that is going the other way. That is where Michael Morse makes his bread and butter, which is unusual for a guy who's 6 foot whatever and,
right.
and as big as he is and as strong as he is. And he's been getting some pitches to drive to right field and right center. And even the pitch that he hit for the home run the other night from against Cole Hamels was a changeup that was up and slightly off, you know, up outside corner. No, he pulled it, but it was still his inside out swing to some degree. And I think that if Michael Morse can get back into the habit of not trying to hit every inside pitch out to left field, and he doesn't, and pitchers can't exploit that hole in his swing, I think we can see big things from him.
Good. Wow. You think he's back next year, Henry?
No. And I think that Michael Morse really needs to be on a if he's listening, I apologize, Michael, but I think he really
he
needs to be
listening.
On
an, we know that.
I think he needs to be on an American League team. I think that mm-hmm. Michael you know, would be better suited being in the American League. It, not that he can't play any defense. I mean, he showed, actually, that he's a fairly capable first baseman.
Yeah, not bad at all.
Not bad at first base at all. But I mean, I think he's a guy who would be better suited to being the DH about 60 to 70% of the time playing some first base. And that's just not a need here. And the Giants are going to have very limited resources next year. And I just don't see it as a fit.
Hey, 40 games to go. If it ended today. It's Bumgarner and Wainwright in the first game, three behind in the loss column. You feel it? Are you feeling it? I thought Bochy felt it yesterday.
No.
I thought Bochy felt it because of the way he managed yesterday. It looked to me like he said, I'm not losing this game. I'm pulling out all the stops.
No, I don't feel it. I think before you can feel it, they have to win consecutive games at home for the first time in 2 months,
okay.
which they haven't done, which they can do today.
That's dark. I mean, that's crazy.
Well, it's the truth. You
no,
haven't.
The
you
truth.
Can't. If you haven't won consecutive games at home in 2 months, it's hard to say that you feel it. The wild card... You know, they are in the wild card position right now, which tells you that, one, this is a very mediocre league mm-hmm. because the Giants are six games over 500 right now. And, yes, the division is reachable. And people don't understand this whole loss column business. Let me try and explain it very simply and succinctly if you haven't done it. I can write that word. I can't
yes.
say it. If you are 4.5 games out in the standings but only 3 out in the loss column, that means that you have played 3 fewer games than the team ahead of you. That means you and not the other team have control over what happens in the standings to those 3 games. You have 3 fewer games. You can make up that difference in the standings by winning. The other team can't make up the difference in the standings by not losing. So the Giants are not out of the National League West. But they have to, certain things have to happen. They have to be able to hit consistently at home. They have to get more consistency out of the rotation. I mean, this is a team that has not, for more than two months, has not been able to get all of its units working together at the same time. And I mean rotation, bullpen, and hitting, especially here at home. When they start doing that a little consistently and start running, you know, wins 5 out of 7, 6 out of 10, 7 out of 11, something like that, then you can start feeling it. Then you can start looking at the standings. Right now, it just, to me, it's silly to look at the standings on August with, you know, the way the wild card is with 5-6 teams within striking distance. Whichever team rips off 8 wins out of 12 is going to take command of that spot.
Yeah, yeah. I said on this homestand and the road trip, I'd like to see 8 out of 11. I don't know. The Washington part of the trip is
right.
certainly fraught with a lot of peril. Henry Shulman with us. Obviously, KNBR Insight. You should have your own show.
Oh, no.
Yes, you should. You should be taking calls. This is for you. Have a lot.
I don't
of
have
opinions.
The. I don't have the Marty Lurie patience to take phone calls.
That
you've seen my Twitter.
True.
If you've seen my Twitter
yes,
feed,
I've seen it.
Yeah, I'd be fired. I'd be fired in about 2 minutes.
Okay, Henry. A couple of things very quickly as we let you go here. I know you've got to get to work. Brandon Belt, Joe Panik. Does he move up in the order? Pence back. You see anything happening? First Belt.
You know that. Well, Belt. I think Belt's a long-term proposition. I mean, he's going to Pittsburgh on Monday to see Mickey Collins. Mickey Collins is the doctor who actually devised the test that teams now use to see if a player, his head is well enough to let him get back in the game. I'd be stunned to see Brandon Belt anytime before September 1st. I mean, this is something where, for whatever reason, this concussion is taking longer than other players who have had concussions. I don't know if it's how he got hit or whether it was him playing in that game and coming back too soon. I don't know what it is, but that's a long-term proposition. And like Hector Sanchez, they need to worry about his overall health before they worry about him in the lineup. Bochy, in terms of panic, Bochy has always felt that if you have a player, especially a young player, and he finds a comfort level at a certain part of the lineup, you leave him there. Because what happens, you see guys get moved up in the lineup. Now, all of a sudden, they put more pressure on themselves because they feel they got to do more. And when you have a kid like Panic who's only been up a couple of months, I would be surprised to see him hitting second. In theory, I like having Pagan, Pence, Posey, Sandoval at the top of the order because it really makes it tough on opposing pitchers to get through that part of the lineup when they are all hitting, which they haven't all been doing at the same time. This is the new think. This is the new think in baseball. Lineup balance isn't as important as getting your best hitters as many at-bats in a game as possible. And he did experiment a little bit when Crawford was going well. He experimented a little bit with putting Crawford up at the second. But that was on days when you had Posey off and you needed a little more balance in the lineup. So 4-8 wasn't just a black hole. But I like the lineup the way it's constituted right now. But it does – you do need guys – when you do have a lineup like that, you do need guys at the bottom of the order to do some hitting, and Panic's doing it.
Yeah, he is.
What's going on with Crawford? Just tired or confidence shaken? What's going on with him?
You know, I wish I knew. If I knew, I could – you know,
fix
I could sit down and go, Brandon, I'm a writer and you're a major league shortstop. I'm going to help you. But I don't know. I don't know what it is. I think they have some ideas. They did work on a fix. Brandon told me when we were on the road, he said that there was a time, you know, he was recoiling too far back on his load. The load is when you move back a little bit to prepare for your swing. Yeah. He was doing a little bit what Belt was doing before, where he was recoiling so far back, it's like the pitcher could read his number when he was throwing the ball. And he said he was working to shorten that up. It's a lot harder. It's a lot easier to actually see what's wrong. But Brandon expressed some frustration to me because he said, you know, I looked at video and there just isn't that much difference between when I was going well and now. And that's frustrating for a hitter because you'd like to go to video and you'd like to say, oh, that's what I'm doing wrong. Yeah. And he wasn't able to find that. I don't know about confidence. I can't get into his head. You know, he's a UCLA guy, so there's a lot of vacant space in there.
Henry, you have a crowd here. Let's hear it for Henry, actually.
Yeah, he's coming with good material today.
He's good. He needs a show. Yeah, Henry Schulman, this is the biggest response we've ever gotten from anyone out here.
Yeah, it would be canceled in a hurry.
All right.
Henry at Cobb's tonight after the game.
Really?
Right?
Don't forget to tip your cocktail waitress. I'll be here all the week.
Very good. Very good. But I appreciate your thoughts about Crawford. I think concentrate on defense and not worry about triples or doubles and that stuff. I think it gets him in trouble, frankly. And who am I? I'm a guy talking on the radio to a major league shortstop and an insider. So nobody's going to listen to me.
Yeah.
But we appreciate you being on.
Yeah.
This is fun today. Andy said Lincecum to the bullpen next year. I'll give you that last softball to hit.
Yeah, I don't think that can happen. And I think, frankly, the reason is that they've got too much money invested on them. You know, like Andy said in one of his rare lucid moments on that interview, you know, this is a team that does not have a lot of payroll flexibility. And you know what? Starters cost a lot more than relievers. And if you stick Lincecum in the bullpen, then you got to go out and get a starter. I mean, you see what a Tim Hudson cost, $11 million. That's the going rate for a Tim Hudson, $11 million. A decent starter who's not as good as Tim Hudson could be $8 or $9 million. But you know what? A good power arm in the bullpen you can get for $3 million, $4 million. So I just think the economics of it, will not allow Tim Lincecum to be in the bullpen.
I agree. I agree
especially if they pay Sandoval $100 million. I mean, it's going to pinch him even more.
Yeah, but Henry's right about the market for an eighth-inning guy,
three
or $4 million, a starter is going to cost you $14 million.
Sure. Yeah, and so Andy, if you're listening, you were just wrong. You were just wrong.
And they're warming up. They're gnashing their teeth for Cal Northwestern August 30th.
This is counterpoint, like 60 minutes. Let's hear it for Henry Shulman.
Good stuff, Henry.
Very good. Thank you, Henry. Very good. That is Henry Shulman. All right, more coming up on KMBR 680, the sports leader.